Hey, everybody. Welcome to American Truth Finders. Pardon me. This is Neil Douglas, and I'm your host for the show. We have a great show lined up for you tonight, and we have two great guests. And for those of you that have been on Facebook, you know who they are, and it's Ilana Freeland and Alexandra May Hunter. And I tell you what, I advised you earlier to be sure, and if you want to call in early, because if you want to ask these ladies any questions, you want to get them in as fast as possible, because I'm sure the phones are going to be ringing. And our topic of our show tonight is chemtrails, ARP, and the evil spectrum dominance of planet Earth, which is actually Ilana Freeland's book. And ladies, hi, how are you? You're great. Go ahead, and either one of you talk first, and I'll let you guys decide who wants to do the main talking. Ilana, I think that was you, wasn't it?
No, that was me, Neil. It's Lexi Hunter.
Okay. Lexi, how about you? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, you're great. You're coming in really strong, and I really appreciate you ladies being on the show tonight. And this is a free call-in show. Our number is 888-429-5471. I'm sorry for the raspy voice, but I got to tell you something. I've had so much allergy and sinus problems, and I hope it's not from the chemtrails, ladies, but who knows at this point in the game, because I tell you what, this is a serious, serious situation that we're going to talk about. And I'm going to get into a couple things real quick. I'm going to start with Ilana, because I want you to give our audience a quick bio of yourselves. Ilana, I want you to go first, and when you're done, just turn it right over to Lexi, and then we'll go into some questions. How's that?
I am Ilana Freeland, the author of Chemtrails, HARP, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth. I got into this. I'd been a writer for quite a while. I ghostwrite books for an agency in New Mexico. And I had been researching for another set of books that I had written of my own, the Sub Rosa America series, about America since Kennedy's assassination. And during that 10 years of research, I came across the chemtrails and HARP. And so I really was not aware that they were connected at that time. I read Nick Begich and Gene Manning's book, Angels Don't Play This HARP, in 1996. And then I ended up in, after grad school, I ended up in Santa Fe again. I lived in England for 3 years and seen chemtrails over London every day that looked like a crossword puzzle. And when I got to New Mexico again, I became friends with the independent scientist Clifford Carnicum, and we would discuss the chemtrails and the connection between the trails and the fibers coming down from the trails that everyone was inhaling, because they're on a nanoparticulate scale. So Clifford and I would often talk at breakfast about this particular connection between the two, between chemtrails and the high-frequency active auroral research project in Gakona, Alaska. And it was only after I returned to the Northwest 5 years, after living in Santa Fe, that I was asked by Adam Parfrey at Farrell House Press if he wondered if I could write a book on chemtrails. And that's how I did it. I did feel I could, and I spent a year and a half researching and writing it, and it came out last June. And I've been busy ever since, on Facebook, on radio shows, and I am now starting the next book, which will be on the space fence. Lexi,
okay,
how about you?
I was just going to say, Lexi, you're up next. And I want to say one real quick thing. I do have that book, and I'm going to tell you, folks, you can get it through Amazon or Barnes & Noble, most any place you can get it. And I'm going to tell you, it's worth getting because there's so much information. And I'm sorry, Lexi, I didn't mean to interrupt your opportunity. I mean, you're on now. Tell the folks about yourself, would you please?
Sure. Thanks for having me on today, Neil. I appreciate having this opportunity to educate people about the currently in effect geoengineering program. I have I've been a legal practitioner for about 24 years. I have several subspecialties. One of them is environmental law. And I became aware of the situation about 3 years ago. And I proceeded to do an enormous amount of research into the program. I had not noticed it before. And when I was doing some research on the internet, I came across it and I went outside and there it was. And shame on me for never having noticed it before, but certainly there it was. And so since that time, I have completely devoted my life to researching this, educating it, and trying to prompt people to take effective action with regard to education and then taking some legislative action is what I'm prompting folks to do now. I believe that the legislative approach is going to be quicker and more effective than litigation. I have spent 3 years trying to find attorneys that would take on this case that have a toxic tort environmental class action suitability to do so. And I've only been able to find one attorney, and he wanted $750,000 as a retainer fee.
Oh my gosh.
And frankly, I'm not dissuading anyone from going that route. I think this is something that should be happening as well. But the court system will prolong this for us. So I'm of the mind, after I've done 3 years of nonstop research and collaborating with other people all over the planet, I believe that we do have the ability to go after this from a state-side sovereign approach. Every single state in the United States has laws on the books regarding air pollution, and this particular subject matter is violating those state statutes.
Now, so, would that be similar to the Rhode Island legislation that they're trying to get pushed through?
Yes. Now, currently, Neil, I'm glad you brought that up because we have a precedent-setting event happening in the state of Rhode Island. Two House representatives, Mr. McLaughlin and Karen McBeth, they sit on the Health and Safety Committee, have introduced what is known as HB, that stands for House Bill 5480, and that is a proposed bill that's still in that Health and Safety Committee for prohibiting geoengineering. It is a first of its kind, and I have been working with activists in about six different states to take this same exact approach. And so Rhode Island is the first state. They are taking comments from people. They will be having a testimony date. They have not set that date. I've been in touch with Representative McBeth, Karen McBeth. So this is the type of approach that I believe is going to be the most streamlined for us. Again, the laws lie at the state level, not at the county level, not at the local level. Every single state in the union has state laws. So I've evolved into a role now where I'm helping people in the different states. I've drafted a document that really, really very succinctly defines geoengineering, the historic aspect of it, all the defined terms, the specific state statutes that apply, and then the impacts to the health and well-being of the people in that state, the ecosystem in that state, and then the economic duress, and that is specific to that state's economy. this is the type of a document that folks need to have in hand so that then when they approach their either state senators or representatives, they can come in very intelligently and begin that conversation. So that's what I've been doing.
Well, I think it sounds to me like you have, oh, I know just by keeping in contact with you with what I'm able to, you and Ilana both are extremely, extremely active and busy. It's like it's 24 hours a day for both of you. And I have to commend you. And I hope that the audience that's listening is paying close attention to this, because this is not a game. This is very serious, because I'm going to be asking Ilana here a little bit about this Morgellons situation. I'm concerned about it as far as, you know, what's happened. And I want to get into what other types of ailments, diseases, and so on and so forth that this causes. Let me ask one quick question, Lexi, before I go to Ilana, and that is this similar? Now I'm talking about the states. What could be done? Is this similar to like possibly a no-fly zone over the states as far as spraying these chemicals?
Well, Neil, and if you don't mind, I'd like to roll back a bit for the audience members that don't know what this is. If you would allow me to, I would like to give the definition of what geoengineering is. So for
please do. Please do.
Okay. So geoengineering, which is defined by the General Accounting Office, which is a federal office, also referred to as climate engineering, climate remediation, and climate intervention, or solar radiation management, is the deliberate large-scale intervention in the Earth's climate system to diminish climate change or impacts, according to the GAO, General Accounting Office, report on climate change, which was titled A Coordinated Strategy Could Focus Federal Geoengineering Research and Inform Governance Efforts. From September 2010, GAO Report Number 10-903. And then in furtherance to that, geoengineering describes activities specifically and deliberately designed to effect a change in the global climate with the aim of minimizing or masking anthropogenic climate change, alleged global warming. Schemes or experiments include any and all attempts to alter, remediate, or mask climate change or global warming by removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere or by solar radiation management, also known as SRM, and also referred to as marine cloud whitening, which injects aerosols, particles, chemicals, gases, vapors, sulfur, barium, aluminum oxide, chaff, salts, or other compounds into the atmosphere to reflect a portion of the sun's radiation back into space, thereby reducing the amount of solar radiation, direct sunlight, reaching the Earth.
Oh, my gosh. Now this is, pardon me, I'm sorry about the raspy voice, but this is actually scary, if I can use that term, and because of what it's doing to everything, plants, animals, people, so this is a scary situation. And I want to give our number out real quick again. It's 888-429-5471. I'm not sure how we will get to know whether or not I got any callers coming in, because my Skype is down, unfortunately. Lexi, thank you for that information. I'll be getting back with you again here very shortly. What I want to know, Ilana, can you tell us what exactly are they spraying?
Well, what's going on is, at least let's look at two angles. The one that I think that my book makes very clear is that there are seven military agendas attached to the spraying program, whether you call it SRM or whatever you call it. It is an aerosol program that the cover story is about deflecting sunlight back into space by virtue of making an artificial cirrus cloud cover. That's basically what's going on. All right. So first of all, before I address your question directly, I want to make it clear that this idea of laying cirrus, artificial cirrus cloud cover to deflect the albedo effect, as it's called, is wrong. It's not good science. It's misleading. It's confusing. And I want to quote from the book where I quote the scientist, the cloud physicist William Cotton, when he said, cirrus clouds contribute to warming of the atmosphere owing to their contribution to downward transfer of long-wave radiation. In other words, they are a greenhouse agent. It has even been proposed to seed in clear air in the upper troposphere to produce artificial cirrus, which would warm the surface enough to reduce cold season heating demands. So the prospects for seeding cirrus to contribute to global surface cooling do not seem to be very good. I mean, Dr. Cotton was being very careful in his wording. No doubt he too has signed some sort of confidentiality agreement regarding what he can and cannot speak about in public, like most scientists. But we see this cirrus cloud cover, but what we don't know is that they are filled with particulates. And we already know from many, many, many samples. People often say, well, you'd better prove this. Well, it's been proven over and over, but no mainstream media, no meteorologist on the 6 o'clock news will cover it, because some sort of dictum has come down from what I call in the book the national security state. The National Security Act of 1947 has been the bane of this nation's existence since its inception. So what we have is a secret program in which barium, aluminum, strontium, sulfur, etc., is all being dumped on us on a nanoparticulate scale, which is less than 1 micron thick. So we are breathing this. And the question is, yes, there are seven military agendas, but I would say that behind all of the agendas is the necessity to keep our atmosphere ionized. And what that means is that the atmosphere must be kept battery ready, an electrical loaded atmosphere for what the military likes to call C4. And that stands for command, control, communications, and cyber warfare. So we are now, I don't believe it is that they are trying to kill us necessarily in a sort of eugenics agenda. I think that we are collateral damage to military programs that are more important than us, because we can always breed more. And it is also making the medical and the big pharma industries rich because of all of our mainly, and you were describing your asthma, mainly respiratory symptoms from what we're breathing. It isn't just the metals we're breathing. We're breathing polymers as well. The polymers are often loaded with biological and genetic experiments that, again, are we're breathing them in, we're drinking them in, we're eating them in through GMOs. We are the largest field experiment in the history, in any history I know of, and that is my training in history. So I think that I would like to mention at some point, if it's all right with you, Neil, I would like to mention the seven agendas so that people can see that this is much more than about weather, though the weather is certainly pivotal and central.
I'm glad you are, because I have those seven agendas in front of me, and I was going to ask you about them anyway, so go forward.
All right. And, I mean, you could just as well read them too, but there's a bit more in each one. All right, seven agendas. And again, I stress, this is a military-industrial intelligence complex set of agendas. And it is amazing to me. I have read countless accounts of geoengineering, proposals for geoengineering, papers about geoengineering, and now there's a big, big media thrust because we are heading toward December when the Paris Climate Change Conference will happen, when this will all be rubber stamped and we will move from covert to overt. But these seven agendas are key to understanding why they have kept it secret from us. And these are the reasons. The first agenda is weather and environmental modification. And this is all about warfare. And when I say warfare now, ever since the revolution in military affairs in the 1990s, we have moved into an asymmetric model of warfare. And this includes political warfare, economic warfare, biological warfare, chemical warfare. It's all of it, all of the above. And so when I say this is for weather modification and environmental modification, these other forms of warfare are ways for many corporations, individuals with money to profit from all the damage and destruction done by weather, by tornadoes, by earthquakes, by hurricanes. This is a huge economic opportunity. It's as though we sent all of our commodity making to the developing world, and now we're moving into what Naomi Klein called disaster capitalism. And we are now going to have the fat cats make money off of not just debt, but out of actual destruction, because the weather is now controlled and engineered. So that's a huge one. Number two, second agenda, electromagnetic operations. We are, even though HAARP is being retooled for another job, the research that they gained from HAARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project up in Gakona, Alaska, has spawned a variety of other experimental and absolutely known toolings by which we will move toward what the next book will be about, which is the space fence. And so the electromagnetic operations, drawing charged particles from the upper atmosphere into our lower atmosphere, the spreading of conductive metals, which will avail the military of C4 operations. All of this is of crucial interest to the military-industrial intelligence complex. Third agenda, military operations. This would go all the way from refueling low-orbiting platforms to space operations and space wars. And that would be where the scalar space fence that I'll be writing about comes in, because that will be replacing the old ground-based missile defense system. And the public has not been informed of this yet, but it will be eventually. Then the fifth agenda is planetary geophysical operations. and this would include the Earth's changes in the troposphere and magnetosphere, including big oil is involved in this, the fracking that's going on, which the tomographic capabilities of satellites that are stimulating earthquakes, sinkholes are collapsing, salt domes are collapsing down on the Gulf. So many things are going on. Will our continents look the same after 20, 30 years of this? I really don't know. The sixth agenda is, of course, very pivotal, intelligence and surveillance for the sake of C4. This would include virtual warfare. This would include holographs. This would include mind control and the targeting of individuals, the pulsing to populations to make them quiescent, to make them violent. None of this is science fiction anymore. And finally, Clifford and I realized there was a seventh agenda, and this one I don't cover in the...
Did we lose her? Yeah. I'm
from
here.
Alpha Centauri, but it certainly is... something could be close to it, which would be that we ourselves have exotic propulsion systems that the public has not been informed of. We all know about Area 51 and S4 and Skunk Works and how high secretive operations go on there. And this would exotic propulsion system would include the what is known as the Aurora, the XB-47B. It could also be electromagnetic disc technology gained from Operation Paperclip Nazis that we brought in, and it could also be exotic propulsion from other dimensions. And there certainly are more dimensions than the four that we know. So those are the seven agendas. And as I said, none of this is ever mentioned in any of the ongoing argument between is it an ice age, is it global warming, back and forth like a tennis match. But it is true that if you can control the argument in the mainstream media, you can control the outcome, which is what I think they're heading toward.
Now, you're referring to Clifford. You're referring to Clifford Carnicon?
Yes, and I didn't mention, I think I skipped the biological chemical operations, and that's really, really important, the biotechnical delivery of biowarfare components now that we're into nanotechnology.
Yeah.
This is hugely important, and of course, this is where Clifford and I did the brunt of our work. He looked at my saliva, he drew my blood, we looked at it under a microscope, and there I saw what has been misnamed Morgellons. That's actually a 17th century word that really doesn't fit this condition at all, but he has renamed it the cross-domain bacteria because it is genetically engineered. It is sort of half or a third non-organic and two-thirds organic. It has micro sensors in it on a nanoscale. And microprocessors in it. In other words, little tiny, tiny computers by which it can be remotely communicated with. These Morgellons, cross-domain bacteria, communicate with each other in the body. We all have breathed them in. I don't know about countries like China and Russia, though I do know they have very similar programs. But certainly in all NATO countries, we have breathed these particulates, these genetically altered particulates, in and they are in our bodies. I've seen them eating the iron out of my erythrocytes. I am the host for these beings, and I have no lesions. I do not have the lesions, and as to why some people have them, some people don't, I don't know the answer to that, but one of my theories is that if the immune system is compromised, then it may be that the body in its last resort is attempting to throw them off and lesions develop, but that's entirely conjecture. This is something we all share. There are not just a few people who are checking into emergency rooms and clinics and hospitals and then being told that they have delusional parasitosis and are treated and humiliated because either there is a tremendous ignorance in these hospitals and clinics, or the doctors and the administration have informed the doctors that they are not to tamper with a federal operation. That's my favorite theory. But we all have these little critters in us. And even though it creeps us out, I don't know, there are parasites. I had a tapeworm when I was 21. I remember that when I went off meat and became vegetarian. I assume we all get into bed at night and, cuddle up with a billion dust mites. And in our colon, our intestinal tract, we have flora and fauna that are our friends and help us. So, this is the only thing new here is that these cross-domain bacteria appear to be very electrically sensitive, electromagnetically sensitive, and they communicate with each other so that if you attempt to attack them at one point in a lesion, and I'm sure Morgellon sufferers listening know what I'm talking about, then the others will hear that cry for help and rush to help that comrade. At the same time, it's very feasible, and this has not been proven very clearly, Clifford wants to be very clear about that, that they can be remotely contacted, even possibly remotely programmed, to develop lesions in someone who becomes a problem for, in some way, some dissident or a whistleblower or whatever. So this is feasible, that the communication is a two-way communication. The sensors are taking in data. Those can be picked up by computer by a guy sitting with a laptop at his desk in Denver. And that is part of the research and the experimentation going on a vast scale.
Okay, I'm going to tell you, everything you're telling us here, excuse me, Ilana, is so intense. Now, I'm going to, Lexi, I want you to get in on this one, because you are approaching the states and trying to come up with reasons, to get laws passed. How in the world? Now, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but how in the world do you convince these legislators or just the people out there that think that this is a conspiracy, that this really isn't happening? How do you convince them?
Okay, so let me jump in.
Sure.
What I talk about is that Dr. Russell Blaylock, who's a practicing MD, he's an expert toxicology researcher. He's a former professor at several leading universities. He's a neurosurgeon. He's a brain doctor. And he was also a former medical doctor to the United States military. And Dr. Blaylock, who spent years researching the neurotoxicity effects of aluminum, is on the record that this is happening. Dr. Rima Labo, who is also a well-regarded medical doctor, is also on the record. Her husband is a retired general, Major General Stubblebine. Both of them are on the record that the program is happening. So there are medical experts. We have a particle physicist out of CERN in Geneva, and I'm not approving the CERN operation, but Dr. Mm-hmm. Jasper Kirkby is on the record with regard to the fact that there are currently in the troposphere, because that's where airplanes fly, not the stratosphere. They are in the troposphere dumping aerosols globally. So in addition to the Morgellons that Ilana referred to, there's some other stuff going on here with health effects. You have vitamin D deficiency from increasing cloud cover, and that's based from the CDC, which is linked to rickets, asthma, allergies, increased cancer, thyroidism, sorry, osteoporosis, depression, diabetes. You have the upper respiratory, you have Alzheimer's. You have autism. You know, aluminum is a very, very toxic chemical. And as Ilana said, these are nano-sized, minute particles. So they cross through the blood barrier inside of our bodies. And I wanted to just step back just a little teensy bit about the weather modification aspect of this.
Okay.
Because something folks need to understand is that the geoengineering aerosols are changing up the pH of the soil. So we have droughts. For instance, classic case, the state of California. Well, come to find out, Monsanto owns the exclusive anti-drought-resistant GMO seeds. So not only do you have the state of California, which supplies, depending on the crop, between 25 to 43% of the United States consumption of the food supply, you've got these farmers that don't have any water. There's the billionaire funds that are coming in and running land grabs, Agenda 21 style. Right now, it's happening in the state of California. Anybody can look this up. It's all real and it's all happening. So I wanted to emphasize that not only on the geoengineering side, we have Raytheon, which is knee-deep in the patents. We have patents that mirror all of the chemical constituents that are coming up in rainwater, the snow samples. Then you have Monsanto, which is trying to control the food supply with poisoned GMO seeds. So these are two, both the GMO part and both this geoengineering part are hand in hand. They are both interconnected underneath the umbrella of that first agenda of weather modification. And then if I may, I want to make one more point. Ilana and I had an interview a few weeks ago with another great guy, Richard Sachs of Sedona. And
yes.
We were talking about the military aspect of this program, and I want to be perfectly clear to your audience. When I talk about this program, I refer to it as a military operation and their subcontractors there too, because hundreds of thousands of people on a daily basis are videotaping and they are photographing commercial airliners that are spewing this stuff. It's not coming from the jet fuel. These are obviously jets that are specially retrofitted with nozzles either on the tails or the wings. It's not coming from jet fuel. If it was coming from the jet fuel, we wouldn't see the start and stop of the trails. No jet in midair can just stop its engines. I mean, that is, so I know that there is, you know, some people are suggesting that it is in the jet fuel, and I beg to differ, because we have the start-stop action that people bear witness to on a daily basis. They are able to track commercial airliners with their flight numbers, okay, with the trail activity. Now, I don't know, ladies and gentlemen, whether there are actually passengers on these airplanes. I know that one.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Okay, well, and I'm not going to name any names here, but there is one particular area that I'm down in the Southwest, and I see these jets, and a lot of people have photographed these jets. The aerosols are coming out of the tail of that airplane. So it would be very easy to have a load of passengers on that airplane, the stuff coming out the back, and the passengers would never see it. There's something off about the fact that tens of thousands of people are recording this evidence of these commercial airliners, that they can track it on software. It's a particular airline. It has a dedicated flight number. Why aren't we seeing people from inside that plane taking pictures of this? I know if I saw this stuff coming off of a wing of an airplane, I would be questioning. And so there's something odd going on with it. And I just want to make the distinction that, yes, it is a military operation. I had a high-ranking official at EPA in Chicago admit to me that it is the United States Air Force that is implementing it, and they have told the EPA to stand down. So I know it's an operation done by the military and the NATO nations. However, they are subcontracting part of this out. They cannot keep the troposphere saturated with this stuff with just the military aircraft. Obviously, they're subcontracting this out to commercial airliners. And I don't know if they're just using the jets and there's no people in that plane, although the one airline, we've got plenty of photographs of this stuff coming out the tail of the plane on the rear horizontal stabilizer. So with
it's almost unbelievable when you think about it, but yet I do believe it because there's too many people talking about it. You know, like you just said, and you know, I'm just gonna interject one quick thing, because Ivana had mentioned HAARP earlier, and it's been a few years back. A man by the name of Steve Ellswick, he was with the, and I think he might still be, but it's under a different name. He was an editor for the Tesla Society magazine, and he first told me about HAARP and what it was meant to do, and at that time, all they knew was the weather control in case of warfare. That was what they knew at that point. So my guess, or my question now is going to be, with HAARP being involved, Agenda 21 being involved, the UN has finally admitted, am I correct, that the chemtrails are being used 100% and they are poisoned?
No, the United Nations has never made that admission. And
okay.
one other distinct point that is a very important detail for your audience to understand.
Okay.
Today's jet engines are either high bypass turbofan jet engines or ultra-high bypass turbofan jet engines, which are incapable, because of the engineering of that type of equipment, they are incapable of emitting condensation trails. So if you go back prior to 2000, you can see some condensations trails coming out of the equipment that was fitted on airplanes at that time. Okay, so since that time, all of your commercial airliners have that type of a jet engine. Doesn't matter which manufacturer. There are some very, very high-tech military aircraft that emit condensation trails. So anyone, for instance, meteorologists, the media, the standard talking points of these politicians that send out form letters to people, even the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality tried this last June 25th when I put them on actual legal notice at a meeting in Kingman, Arizona. Today's jet engines do not emit condensation trails. So game over for them with that talking point. It's an outright lie, and it is not today's equipment that is on the airplanes.
That's right. I wanted to add here that before I see that Time's Winged Chariot is going, so I'm going to stick this in there. I'm getting ready to give a talk at the University of Toronto. Some wonderful people there from Bye Bye Blue Sky and the Conspiracy Bookstore have invited me to give a talk this next Saturday night. So I just want to say that I am so impressed. I mean, I've met Lexi. I've met amazing people in this movement. And if people out there are waiting for the experts to back up what Lexi and I and others are saying, we cannot wait for them. They are under duress. Most scientists who are have work, that work is coming because of military grant monies. It is very difficult for a scientist to do work that is not military funded now, and they are put into a situation where they are compartmentalized. They have need to know clearance. And so the right hand does not know what the left hand is doing. This is the conundrum that our scientists are under. So I no longer wait for them. Dr. Blaylock is intrepid, and I'm so grateful for the few scientists we have and doctors who are coming forward to speak. And I can imagine that they have a bit of anxiety about that if they go too far. So for me, it's a matter of thinking your way through all this and finding out what is true and what is not true. And it does take a great deal of time and energy. Unfortunately, Lexi and I are not highly paid. That's a joke. But the ability to think our way through this and not to fall prey to fear and emotionalism that are come out of what is well known to be cognitive dissonance and is something that I want to encourage people to develop. We need activists. We need people who read this book not because it's the greatest book in the world, but because it is the only book at this point that is attempting to tell the truth on the multiple levels that these programs are operating under and for. So if people can read the book, 600 footnotes, lots of information, and giving a context to people that these are military operations. And when I say military, I mean that there is no black line between the military and its defense contractors. And when I say defense contractors, I'm including telecommunications corporations. Nice. The 1996 Telecommunications Act under Clinton is what people are facing who are trying to keep cell towers from giving their children cancer. And that law prevents people from any defense in any litigation sense from appealing to health. It is a draconian law that should be struck from the books. And just to make clear, we're in a really unusual situation now. Yes, we've had pollution for years. We had smoking. We've had all sorts of things that have traveled in the air. But never have we been assaulted the way we are being assaulted now. And what that means is a synergy develops that is very hard to counter, and our immune systems are being ultimately challenged now. When you have electromagnetism and you have an ionized atmosphere and you have cell phones, iPhones, you have Nexrads and towers everywhere disguised as pine trees and church steeples, when you are immersed in an electromagnetic environment, what is that going to do, not just to your health, what is it going to do to the DNA of future generations. I mean, this is, our backs are against the wall, and we need all hands on deck. And that's why Lexi and I are devoting our lives to this. This is not just another issue. This is the core issue because of the synergy that is resulting. And I haven't even talked about Fukushima. I mean, I'm not even going to go there. But
yeah, I agree. I agree, Silvana. This is a survival issue. And if I can just say very quickly, I'd like to get something in, that the federal law, 50 USC 1520A, provides that the Secretary of Defense may not conduct directly or by contract any test or experiment involving the use of a chemical agent or biological agent on the civilian population, or two, any other testing of a chemical agent or biological agent on human subjects, except for any peaceful purpose, emphasis added, that is related to a medical, therapeutical, pharmaceutical, agricultural, industrial, or research activity. No reasonable person would ever construe the activity of unmarked airplanes or any airplanes or methods of disbursement, for that matter, of aerosol spraying the population with toxic chemicals for research purposes as peaceful. On the contrary, such activity is a direct, hostile, and dangerous act of aggression, and it's happening right in plain sight on a daily basis, and millions of people are observing such. Under this law, the Secretary of the Defense is required to obtain consent from the person subject to such test or experiment, as well as notify Congress. There are 350 people, a million people approximately, in this country, and based upon fact-based evidence, we believe this program is happening, is a clear and present danger. Our health and the health of the ecosystem is at risk, being damaged and is being harmed, and the national security of the United States is in grave danger, and we do not consent.
Well, I'm going to tell you, ladies, I wish we had more time, but we have run out of time, and you've both been great. I wish this was a two-hour show at this point, because we could go on and on and on. I want to thank both of you for your information, and hopefully we can do this again, because where we can get our callers in. And I apologize for the Skype situation, because I can't even contact with my engineer to know what's going on. But you've been wonderful. I want to thank you so much. And for those of you that want to follow these ladies, go to Facebook. Honestly, you'll find so much information. And also go to AmericanTruthFinders.com. Their information will be up there. The show will be on as an archive for eons. So anyway, we're going to keep the website up as it is right now with this information for you to look at. Again, my name is Neil Douglas. Lexi or Alexandra Mayhunter, thank you so much. Ilana Freeland, thank you so much. And again, you're doing a wonderful job. And ladies and gentlemen, if you can help them financially, do this. Do something, because these ladies are not making any money. I can attest to that. And again, thank you, ladies.
Thank you, Neil.
Yeah, thank you, Neil, for having us on. This is really great to get the word out, and I'm very grateful. I appreciate it. And thanks to Ilana. She's wonderful, and it's so great to do these programs with her. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, ladies. And everyone, hey, I will be on the air next Sunday, folks. It is an open forum, or we're going to talk about the Jade Helm situation. But right now, as it is, it's open forum. Anyway, this is Neil Douglas saying good night from America Truth Finders. Talk to you next Sunday.